When I picked this sermon title a month or so ago, and when I wrote the brief description for the extra last week, it made perfect sense to me. Today is the spring equinox, the balance point after which days get longer and brighter. Spring has arrived, and we see evidence of it all around us, even if we also have recent proof that we're probably not done with snow for the year quite yet. Today is also Palm Sunday, the day on which Christians celebrate the triumphal entry of Jesus into Jerusalem and begin observing the milestone rituals of Holy Week. And a week from now, we will be celebrating Easter together. What could make more sense than spending today celebrating new life or the return of life after a period of dormancy? And then, when I was in the office here on Wednesday and working on my sermon in between meetings, it hit me. This is one of those times that happen more often than you might think to your ministers, that I'm preaching a topic partly because I need to hear it. Because, friends, I am tired, profoundly tired, bone-weary tired, balancing grad school work and parenting a teenager, tired. And I bet I'm not the only one here this morning feeling that way, am I right? Just like it's true that not all of us find the Christmas season to be one of unbroken joy, not everyone feels rejuvenated along with the earth in spring. Or maybe we do, but it takes a little time. Some of us get fatigued just by the cycles of nature, by winter itself, and are relieved every year when spring shows up and our energy increases along with the number of hours between dawn and dusk each day. Something like a big snowstorm can leave us feeling a bit weary. Some of us may still be stuck in that winter mode of wanting to hibernate, perhaps with a good book and a mug of tea and a big blanket. And then there's the rising anxiety in our society, reflected in the national political scene that we can't escape without turning off all forms of media. That certainly doesn't help. It's emotionally exhausting, right? But when I made that list a minute ago of things that are wearing me out, guess what? They're also good things. I am finishing my degree. I'm preparing to graduate, which will be a big celebration of reaching a milestone I have been moving towards for years, even before I actually began school. I am working in ministry, even before finishing that degree, and I am aware of what a blessing and a gift that is. I am parenting a teenager, but the truth is that he is actually incredibly easy to parent most of the time, and he is the greatest joy in my life. Really, I have nothing to complain about, except perhaps a lack of sleep. So what do we do when even the exciting things in our life are also exhausting? For me, this week, when I stopped thinking of only the joy of spring and Easter, and thought about Palm Sunday and what comes between now and Easter, I realized that even in this season of renewal, the path is neither easy nor straightforward. Nature shows us blooms and blossoms, and then we get a heavy snowfall, as we did just a few days ago. Christ's triumphal entry into Jerusalem was followed by betrayal and murder, by a few dark days when he was neither on the cross nor risen, but in the tomb, before that story came back around to the joy of resurrection. Whether we are Christian or not, the story of Holy Week offers us a metaphor for something we all experience in our ordinary and extraordinary human lives. Whether you celebrate Easter as Christ's miraculous rising from the tomb, or spring as the renewal of life in the natural world, this season is one of rebirth and rising for all of us. In my neighborhood and here around our church, I've been seeing new grass, the bright green of tiny new young leaves, daffodils, grape hyacinth, and I think I've maybe seen my first few dandelions. Yes, I even celebrate the dandelions. I know they're technically weeds, but they are such cheerful and persistent flowers that I can't help but like them. They rise again for sure. We can celebrate not only the spring holidays with their symbols of new life, but our own ability to rise again. As human beings, we know that our lives follow a never-ending cycle of ups and downs, beginnings and endings. Between birth and death, we will face many times of inactivity or transition or trauma or just plain fatigue, times when we may feel that we are in a metaphorical tomb, in need of some resurrection ourselves. How do we choose to rise again after times like that? It would be artificial to try to move too quickly to a place of light and life. We actually need that time in the tomb to experience our loss or our struggle fully. It's like time as a seed in dark soil, preparing for growth. Eventually, though, it is time to love ourselves to new life, time to roll away the stone from the tomb, to stick those first tiny, tender green shoots out into the spring sunshine. Without that risky new beginning, there is no new life, no resurrection for us. Now, some tomb experiences are not traumas, but rather transitions. Author William Bridges wrote about transition as the slow internal process that people go through to come to terms with change, which is external and often faster than we would like. In his model, transitions actually start with an ending, followed by a neutral zone, and only then by a beginning. Now, that may feel backwards to us, but trust me, it'll become clear in a moment. The ending that Bridges talks about is often a trauma, but not always. It can be a recognition that something's not working, that something needs to shift. It can even be a positive experience, like my recognizing a call to ministry, but it still includes the ending of something else, a letting go of the way things have been. The neutral zone that Bridges refers to is the tomb. This is the place between what was and what will be. It is, if you will, a kind of emotional wilderness, a time when perhaps it is not clear who you are or what is real. It is often painful and sometimes long, but it is also where creativity, growth, and renewal flourish. Only upon leaving that tomb can the real beginning happen as we move into a new life, defined by our new understanding of ourselves and of our world. When I personally think of those tomb experiences, of those times of feeling alone in the dark, I think of my divorce 6 years ago. The marriage had been slowly disintegrating for years, but I still wasn't fully prepared for that moment of parting. In the process of picking up the pieces in the days and months that followed, it was obvious that I would not get my old life back. While there might be sunshine waiting for me once I could push the stone away from the tomb's entrance, the world would have changed while I was in there. Things would never again be the way they were before. Dreams I clung to in the bad times were now not ever going to come true. I knew even then that it was also true that dreams I had had to defer, including pursuing my call to ministry, could now happen sooner, but that didn't take away the sting of giving up those other dreams. In my head, for a while, things were divided into capital B before and capital A after. I imagine some of you have had life experiences that had that same effect for you. In some ways, I knew that our after, mine and my son's, would be healthier, but that didn't make it easy. It took time for me to begin to not only emerge into the spring sunshine, but to find joy in it rather than needing to shield my eyes from its brightness. During that time of slow healing, every small loss or disappointment was a reminder of the bigger loss of the divorce, a trigger for renewed feelings of grief. Now I can look back on some of those stories and smile gently at myself with the wisdom that comes from distance. From a distance, I can see that coming through that tomb experience was an important step on the path towards who I am today and the path towards ministry. One of the truths about emerging from tomb experiences is that we don't always even see them for what they were until some time has passed. We need to gain a little perspective. Then they can assume their appropriate place in our stories instead of feeling like they are the whole story. We have to get to the after before really being able to integrate the before. Now, I am not saying that every after is necessarily better than before. Sometimes, as with my divorce, it is. Sometimes, as with the death of a loved one, it is not. But dark times are a fact of human life. So is the fact that we almost always eventually emerge from those dark times. After we mourn, after we allow ourselves to be held by those who love us, after we honor the darkness by not denying it or pretending it did not happen, we choose to emerge. When we do, there is a new reality and some questions for us to answer. What from before fits into your vision of after? What is it time to let go of? It can be empowering to realize that you are the one choosing what to carry forward and what to leave behind. Some precious things may be intact from your life before. Traditions you still love, people who are still important to you, values you still hold dear, your own ability to continue living and loving. But maybe for some of you, right now, you are not ready to step into the bright sunlight. Maybe the tomb feels like safety rather than loneliness. If we move too quickly into the light without allowing ourselves time to really feel the darkness, we are actually not doing ourselves any favors. Healing cannot be rushed, not if it is to be true healing. Birth or rebirth takes time. It doesn't happen overnight. Time in the tomb may, in fact, be an opportunity for deepening our spiritual practice, an opportunity we likely weren't looking for, one we probably didn't welcome when it arrived, but one rich with potential. We find ways to nourish ourselves the way the seed is nourished in that dark soil. We may pray or meditate. In my case, I journaled, wrote poetry, listened to music. One particular song, Meg Barnhouse's All Will Be Well, that is a musical adaptation of Julian of Norwich's prayer, All Will Be Well and All Will Be Well, All Manner of Things Will Be Well. That song was one of my spiritual practices through my tomb experience. We each do whatever it is that connects each of us to something that gives us strength, that allows us to eventually be reborn, whether that's a higher power, or the natural world, or a song, or a still strong core within us. And then we step out of the tomb and into the light. I knew my resurrection had begun when the song that I listened to over and over again shifted from Meg's All Will Be Well to another song on the same CD, Chrysalis, which includes an invitation to let your spirit fly. Resurrection doesn't come easily. Growth doesn't always happen painlessly. Communities, too, experience periods of transition or decline or fatigue, and may lose hope or may lose sight of where we can go. How do we, human beings in communities of all kinds and sizes, how do we respond as a group to those challenging times when they arrive? How do we rise again together? These questions feel particularly poignant to me right now as I find myself challenged to see hope in the face of the animosity on our national political stage. So I look for hope closer to home. We have lots of exciting things happening here in our church family this spring. You've already heard about Climate Justice Month, which is kicking off today. We are partway through the waiting period between calling Reverend Gretchen Haley to be the next senior minister here and her official transition into that role. We are also partway through the hiring process for a new assistant minister who will work with Gretchen to serve this church. We are in the midst of our annual pledge drive in which each person supports this church that supports us all. Many of you have returned pledges already, and we thank you for your generosity. If you haven't yet, there will be a box in the social hall after service to do that. On Earth Day, we're bringing musician Judy Fiel to be part of a multi-generational service celebrating Earth Day as an entire community. And on Mother's Day, we will once again have a combined choir with Plymouth UCC. That's just a taste of what spring is bringing to Foothills this year. When the excitement of all those good things in my personal life and in our church life is not enough to outweigh the fatigue or the frustration I feel, because let's be honest, sometimes it's not, then I do what I did after my divorce. I step up my engagement with spiritual practices that sustain me. I journal. I sing. I especially find energy in singing with you in worship. I color. How many of you have seen the research recently that shows that coloring for adults has the same benefits as meditation? I'm serious, it does. It does. Coloring books, I recommend them highly. So these are some of the ways that I choose to metaphorically plant grape hyacinth and tulips and daffodils in my spirit, to water them and tend them, rather than letting dandelions or other weeds take over. Or maybe, given what I said earlier, it's a way that I acknowledge and love the dandelions, which are, after all, good food for bees and therefore an important part of our interdependent web of life. Whatever it is for you, when we find ways to step out into the light of spring, we are demonstrating faith. We are showing that we believe in a positive future, a future with new life or renewed life, a future with beauty, with joy. We are choosing to rise again, individually and collectively, having grown through our experiences and learned something about ourselves from them. May we move forward this spring into the positive future that has grown from the seeds we've planted here together as a beloved community. May we rise together, greeting the new life before us with great joy. Amen.